Welcome to the Systematic Understanding of Everything, an Exalted podcast. This show is a collaborative effort between members of The Story Told, Bonus Experience, and Mage the Podcast. We're going to break down the basics of Exalted from its rules to its setting. I'm Monica, 3rd edition supplement developer and lead mechanical developer for Exalted Essence.
I'm Chaz, Exalted writer and fan.
I'm Terry, producer for the show, and I proposed a lot of names for this episode that were ultimately cut, my favorite being Too Craft, Too Furious, and we're not running out of systems episodes, you are. Meh.
And this is episode 22, The Art of Permanence. Today we're going to talk about crafting and artifacts and manses and hearthstones.
What does crafting encompass in Exalted? Please tell me this is like where all the bong makers in creation like put their dots.
Well, I mean, you're not wrong.
Yeah. Crafting in Exalted is a system for making stuff. Everything from a 5-course meal to repairing a building to making a dieclave made out of smaller dieclaves to raising a manse that channels the essence of creation. Craft is one of the 25 abilities, but is also somewhat unique in that you buy it with multiple concentrations describing what kind of craft you practice, such as craft woodworking, craft mechanical devices, or craft cooking. Craft also has a unique subsystem for projects that lets you build up from basic crafting to masterworks like artifacts and manses.
So, building things, what's the system like for that?
Depending on how involved the project is, you determine the project level, which includes basic, major, superior, or legendary. Basic projects are pretty much like any other action. You roll whatever attribute you want, plus craft set against a difficulty set by the storyteller. If you succeed, you make the thing you were trying to make. Pretty straightforward. Then, if you're successful, you get silver crafting experience for completing certain narrative objectives with the project. These include, does it uphold one of your intimacies? Does it create or strengthen an intimacy for you? Does it give some sort of in-game advantage?
Major projects are more involved, such as battle-ready armor, a fancy banquet, or a statue of a prince. Working on the project requires hours to weeks of work, and you have to spend Silvercraft experience to roll for completion. Again, this is a basic roll against a set difficulty. Successes on a major project give you gold craft experience and some more silver. Moreover, you're limited to working on 3 major projects at a time, so you can't spread yourself too thin, although you can buy additional project slots with silver experience.
Superior projects are where you get into the really cool stuff. From a mortal perspective, this includes large-scale works, like warships or city fortifications. But from an exalted perspective, this includes things like artifacts and manses. Like major projects, you need to have a project slot, but for superior projects, you have to fuse major project slots equal to the number of dots the finished artifact would represent, which costs gold experience points. After a period of work, depending on the complexity of the project, you pay 10 gold points to roll towards completion. This is an extended roll against difficulty 5, where you're working towards a large goal number based on extra successes. Completion grants you a mix of gold craft experience and white craft experience.
White points are used for legendary projects, which let you craft first age wonders or build manses and artifacts that exceed the 5-dot scale, but otherwise work pretty much like superior projects.
I heard you like resource management.
How do charms interface with the crafting system?
Like everywhere else in Exalted, craft charms interact with every part of the system, and especially for solars, are really granular in building up small advantages and efficiencies. There are a lot of charms that help you get more craft experience, and a lot that give you dice tricks to help accumulate more successes. Some of the cooler higher-end ones let you pull a project complete from your mind, or use an incomplete artifact. Do you mean, like, complete an incomplete artifact?
No, there's a lunar charm that lets you use an incomplete
artifact.
I think it
just lets you use a thing that's not finished.
And,
oh, okay.
And the heroic things you do with it help you finish it.
That's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah.
Is there a difference between what Exalts are making now and what was made in the First Age? He said rhetorically.
Somewhat. We've talked about First Age artifice in the past being the wonders of the Lost Age. And there's kind of a fuzzy line in between what counts as First Age artifice and what doesn't. But First Age artifice is much harder to make. Something like a War Strider definitely counts as First Age artifice. To make First Age wonders, you have to use Craft First Age Artifice, which requires Lore 5, Occult 5, Craft Artifacts 5, and Sorceress Initiation. These are always legendary projects, so they require white crafting points, and each roll to attempt the project also requires a completed sorceress working. So making the stuff of the First Age is just incredibly difficult.
Is that just beyond legendary or a type of legendary? What makes it different?
It's a type of legendary project, and it's the complexity and the reliance on magics that make it different.
Okay, so is there a level of project that automatically is considered first age artifice, or is it only if you're trying to emulate like the Salt Spires or a War Strider or the Imperial Mance or something like that?
There is not a level that automatically represents first age artifice. First age artifice is always a legendary project, but not all legendary projects are first age artifice.
So how the heck do you tell if something's first-age artifice or not?
Because it's
you
really
know it
old.
When you see it. Generally, okay. The rule is that if it would have setting-changing implications to be readily available, it should be first-age artifice. Or if it's highly technical, it should be first-age artifice.
Like a lot of stuff in second edition was like power armor and shit. But third edition seems to be taking a turn away from Magitek being a thing. And certainly like a commonplace first age thing, which I dislike, but that's my thought as a fan, not my thought as a person who works on the line. As I have stated in other shows, and I think on this one, that I am just a really big fan of like creation as a post-apocalyptic place. Taking away the first age being like, yeah, there were fucking robots, takes something away from that for me personally, as a person who enjoys that as a setting beat, but I understand the decision to do so because the rules for all of that in second edition were hilariously OP. So
I do think there was probably a middle line somewhere there between excising it as much as it has been and walking back the ubiquity that it represented in second edition.
Did you have like any favorite bits of first age artifice?
My copy of Wonders of the Lost Age was clearly used so much the binding is coming apart. Particularly liked it for some of the things that were just neat and weird. There was a whole section that was just like things people had, and it was like this couch that shape changes, this thing that made calls, and like this thing that does translation, and like this thing that keeps your house cool. And it really sort of like portrayed this lost age as like a place where people lived, and I liked those things a lot, even if the fearsome armor of the Immaculate Dragons were busted. And the other ridiculous thing about that in like second edition at least was that like, oh, if you had all these Magitek, then you had to invest all these resources in upkeeping it, and so like there was also the problem of these first age artifacts being a thing that like made the game about them because you had to invest so much into knowing how to maintain them. And that was a problem too.
So what's the point of breaking up projects into types?
In my experience running on the Fall of Giara for Naman Sarissa, who is a crafter, having the different levels of projects breaks things up between things you can knock out in an afternoon and things that should take time, like if you're building an artifact. However, I do think that it's probably too stratified based on the rate of craft experience accumulation and the lofty requirements for building artifacts. It makes making an artifact inaccessible or a once-in-a-campaign thing, even for a crafter who is building at basically every reasonable opportunity. So without downtime, the system kind of breaks down for having a crafter in a regular campaign.
What are Exalted's version then of magical items?
Artifacts are the objects of power in Exalted, and in Exalted, weapons and armor are often enormous and elaborate. Think video games or shonen anime, like the Buster Sword, every ridiculous JRPG suit of armor where like they've got like one party tit that's armored and then the other shoulder has a giant pauldron and two different shoes on, like that sort of thing. I've played many Fire Emblems. Also, most of them have over-the-top names like Grim Cleaver or Grand Eye Clave or Dragon Fang. Long Fang, not Dragon Fang, Long Fang. But this also includes other magical items like clockwork soldiers, chilled containers, crowns that open your senses, collars that keep you supernaturally clean, and other weird stuff.
Artifacts are better than their mundane counterparts, of course, but usually offer some additional magical benefit for attuning them. For weapons and armor, attunement is part of what makes them usable. Without attunement, they're giant slabs of metal, too heavy to lift for some, much less wield effectively.
Artifacts also grant evocations, which are basically charms that you get from artifacts. There's this in-world idea that each exalt could get unique evocations for an artifact, but you can just work with what's there and published. Writing evocations is pretty hard. We recommend finding an artifact and reskinning it if you want to do something unique. There's a handful of examples in the core book. Arms of the Chosen is an entire book of artifacts, and both What Fire Has Wrought and Fangs of the Gate add even more coming in Heirs of the Shogunate and Many-Faced Strangers, including several written by me.
What makes writing evocations harder than, say, just writing a charm?
Writing charms is hard, and you need to make sure that what you're writing does not replace or supersede existing charms that the player has access to. You've got a double challenge in that.
And also solars are resonant with everything. So if you are writing heirloom artifacts for the Dragonblooded book, you have to figure out backdoor ways, lunar artifacts for Many-Faced Strangers. You have to figure out backdoor ways to keep solars from being better at using artifacts themed for a specific exalt type.
So how do you make an artifact?
As we said above, crafting an artifact is a superior project that has a couple of additional requirements. First, you need to have at least lore 3, occult 3, and some craft at 4, which lets you buy the new craft ability, craft artifacts. Then when you're rolling to make an artifact, you roll with a lower of your craft artifacts or other relevant craft ability. So if you're making a dieclave out of other dieclaves, which are all metal, and you have blacksmithing at 4 and craft artifacts at 3, you'd only get the 3 dice because that's the lower of the two. The number of dots of the artifact sets the gold number from 30 successes for a 2-dot artifact up to 100 successes for a 5-dot artifact, as well as the interval between rolls, with greater artifacts requiring more time between each roll towards completion.
When you buy craft artifact, that is not an additional specialty. You now just have another instance of craft at 1?
Yes. Craft gets multiple instances. So you, like in The Fall of Giara, Nimon Sarissa, our crafter, has 2 different tracks of craft. Of craft mechanical devices and I think craft structural engineering. And each time she's rolling, we determine which of those 2 craft abilities she's using, and she gets the number of dots from that ability.
So where do you learn to make artifacts?
There isn't really a formal process for this. In the realm, it's one of the skills you might learn at the Heptagram, and in Lukshai at the Academy of Sorcery. But since each artifact is an individual masterwork, you can also learn by simply being a master of your craft, especially if you're not a Dragonblooded and don't have a formal educational structure.
One of the big themes in Exalted seems to be kids, you don't have to go to college to have a fulfilling career. I really appreciate that. Are artifacts magical?
Yes.
Okay, they're all magical, but you don't necessarily need to know sorcery to make them.
Correct. They get their magic from a combination of the materials they're made from and the sheer awesomeness of their construction.
Okay, so the item itself brings the magic to the party. The materials bring the magic to the party. And
yes.
Then the crafter is just shaping them, even if they themselves are not a sorcerer. Magical items in a lot of games are made out of special stuff, and you mentioned these materials. What are they in Exalted? What are the special materials?
So most artifacts are constructed from one of the 5 magical materials, which are associated with the 5 original Exalt types. So you have Orichalcum, which is the solar one, Moonsilver, which is the lunar one, Star Metal, which is the sidereal one, Soulsteel, which is the abyssal one, and Jade, which is the dragon-blooded one. You can also make artifacts from other suitably magical materials as narratively appropriate, like the blood of a demon, or the hair of a behemoth, or the still-living heartwood of a tree from the elemental pole of wood, or the teeth of a Raksha, or whatever, right? Like, all those things, suitably magical. And frequently you will see artifact descriptions that is like, this is a blue jade. Oh, and jade comes in 5 different colors. Red, white, blue, black, and green. Each one corresponding to an element. And so you'll have like a, this is a blue jade chakram lined with the teeth stolen from a primordial beast, right? Like, you get cool stuff like that that combines both a magical material with another suitably magical thing. The magical material itself is what determines resonance with an artifact, which is a mechanical benefit for being an exalt type that, like, your essence, rather, aligns with that magical material. These are usually special riders on evocations.
So Orichalcum is something I know from history. Soulsteel, I know that from Wraith. Like, can you get jade is a stone? I call it nephrite. Are these fundamentally different, or are we just saying that green rocks and creation are somehow different and come in five shades, like blow pops or something.
So jade in creation is not the jade of our earth. It is a magic stone that does indeed come in five colors attuned to the five elements that naturally channels the essence of those elements. And they talk about making jade steel where they powder it and combine it with steel. But they also talk about carving jade. So there's some weird material properties going on there. But that is probably the most abundant of the magical materials. Orichalcum is sun gold. It's gold that extra reflects the light of the sun and is awesome. And also actually hard, because making a sword out of gold would not be a good idea.
Moonsilver is silver if silver were also mercury and empowered by the light of the moon. So it's like fluid and shapeshifty and shimmering and glowing because it's the lunar thing. So a suit of armor made out of moonsilver gets huge when you do, or whatever. Star metal is the exalted version of the very cool, like, this is steel made from ore from falling stars. It has some very stupid origins in previous editions, but it remains sort of a weird, rare metal from the heavens that it looks like regular metal, but like reflects prismatic.
It also absorbs the essence of destiny because it's rock that's been floating out among the stars, which are a key to destiny in Exalted. That's how it gets its association with the Sidereals. And finally, soul steel is the metal of the underworld, made from the souls of the dead pressed into metal. It has a kind of dark effect with like screaming, tormented faces that appear ghostly on its surface. Brings with it bad juju.
What are some cool artifacts in Exalted? And maybe a few that are like, you could have this at character creation to like, this is a cannon that shoots smaller cannons.
We could have that at character creation too.
Yeah, you really could.
A personal favorite of mine from Arms of the Chosen is Gorgon, a white jade diclave that turns those it kills into stone. Contains a slumbering monstrosity that slowly wakes with its eye opening on the hilt of the diclave as you unlock and use its evocations.
That's pretty metal. I wrote two heirloom artifacts for Dragonblooded. I wrote Smiling Razors and I think it's called Heavenly Typhoon. Both of them were a fun first thing to write, as I had not quite gotten my handle on how well I knew third edition then.
Crusading Spear of the Depths is a submersible war strider built to fight undersea monsters, and there's some pretty awesome art of it in Arms of the Chosen fighting like a kraken or something.
So you've mentioned Warstrider a bunch of times, and so what actually are they, and can Exalts be drift compatible?
So a Warstrider is basically a fantasy mecha, so like you're not wrong. They are between 20 and 60 feet tall, they are giant armored suits, and they wield similarly massive weapons. The chassis and cockpit and whatever take their stylings more from the Vision of Escaflowne. Let me explain for you and the audience at home, who some of them are like, oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. The rest of them are like, what the fuck did you just say? It is a thing where you are like strapped in to it, as opposed to it being like a technological thing. It is basically like a big thing that you are tied into and your movements make it move. I wrote the fiction about the Warstrider in Arms of the Chosen, which opens with the like sort of perspective character thinking about how uncomfortable they are being an Earth aspect, anima flaring while suspended in this cockpit.
Are there sorceress or necromantic items?
In second edition, there was craft magitek and craft necrotek craft abilities. But with magitek being replaced with first age artifice and really being set at the legendary level and requiring sorceress workings to make other non-artifact enchanted items, it's not really a thing in third edition, whereas something like necrotech, making stuff out of the dead, will likely make an appearance alongside necromancy in the future.
We've talked about spells and stunts and magical items in Exalted, but let's get into what makes Exalted really next level, in my opinion, that is architecture systems. How does essence move around creation?
Essence of the five elements flows through creation in dragon lines that somewhat follow the geography. So not only are we getting architecture, we're also getting geomancy.
Got it. Dun, dun, dun.
So you have these flows of essence throughout creation. And in some games, when magical power like pools in one spot, something happens. Does something happen where there's a bunch of natural essence in one spot in Exalted?
Yep. That's a domain. And the upwelling of essence can have warping effects on the landscape, producing supernatural elements as well, and warp the beings that live there. As one of the exalted, you can attune to a domain and use it to regain essence faster, as well as to power sorcerous workings. Domains are usually associated with one of the five elements, or more rarely, they have a solar, lunar, sidereal, or abyssal aspect to their energy.
Is that something someone adds to the domain, or is that a thing that's already there?
That's a thing that's already there. Naturally occurring ones with the more esoteric attunements are extremely rare, but you can manipulate a domain to change its aspect. At least you could in the past. We haven't gotten any real rules for geomancy yet for third edition.
How do exalts take advantage of these essence flows?
Through geomancy, you can, in theory, create a domain with mass transformation of the landscape. Previous editions, places where exalted spent a certain amount of essence could also form a domain. Mastercrafters can build a manse to cap a domain. Manses are magical, often fantastic buildings. They are sweet magical pads in which you live, and they produce what is called a hearthstone, which we are about to get into in a moment. The system for turning a domain into a manse is basically the same as crafting an artifact, but requires craft colon geomancy.
Yes. One of the things we haven't really heard about is things that, like, store essence. Are there essence batteries or something like that in the setting?
Yes, there are. There's special crystals that can hold motes of essence, and that is kind of a simple battery. Put essence in, take essence out later. There's also hearthstones, which form out of solidified essence, kind of like materia if you are a Final Fantasy VII fan, and are magical gemstones from which you can pull essence from creation, and specifically from the manse and domain that the hearthstone comes from.
Okay, so it's like a portable essence battery. So, like, it's a connection back to your domain?
Yes.
Oh, that's neat. Okay, so it's not really a battery in that, it's a conduit.
Yes.
So they are the power cables of creation. Structures that are built to harness the power of a domain. Are there well-known ones throughout creation? Is that one of those things like castles in a lot of games where it's like, yes, this is Winterfell or Summerfell? I can't remember any of the castle names from those stupid books.
Hightower?
Sure.
The Eyrie?
Yeah.
River Run?
There is, of course, the eponymous Imperial Manse.
What's that?
The big one on the mountain that has the realm defense grid that the Scarlet Empress broke into and made herself the Scarlet Empress. That one.
It serves as the Empress's palace, her personal palace at the heart of the Imperial City, as well as being the control center for the Sword of Creation, which is the in-world name for the realm defense grid that the Empress used to wipe the Balorian Crusade from creation's surface and to scour her enemies whenever they get too uppity.
What does that realm defense grid actually do? Like, paint me a word picture of, like, army is assembled, she pulls the Merkabitch switch, what happens?
A storm of fire sweeps them from the surface of creation.
Oh. Okay.
It's basically a nuke.
Okay. Are there any other well-known manses or maybe any particularly flavorful ones that tie to the directions?
The Salt Spire manses are an example, where the salt spires used to take the water out, but the systems of the manses have been damaged since they were also first age artifice. So there's an example of one that we've talked about. There's a great lighthouse at Lukshai that is a really tall tower that is also a lighthouse and also a manse.
Hearthstones sound real badass. What can they power besides a manse?
Well, you can use them to power first age artifice, including war striders. A war strider needs 3 hearthstones to operate due to the sheer amount of power that they need. You can also stick them in an artifact. Some of them grant powers to those artifacts. So, like, if you played Final Fantasy VII, and we talk about the Buster Sword all the time, the Buster Sword has those slots to put stones in it. Those hearthstones are those stones. So you've got giant rocks in your weapons that glow with essence.
Just to kind of set the power level for a Warstrider, that is something that will level a mortal army, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it can go toe-to-toe with a combat-prepared solar or someone.
The most important thing about a Warstrider is that it is big. and it gains the legendary size advantage, which if you are like, some exalts can just be like, yeah, I can fight big things without one, fuck off. And then whoever's driving the war strider is like, oh dear, and has to deal with someone who doesn't give a shit about the size advantage that supplies. But if you don't, you're kind of in trouble because it's pretty hard to fight something that's much bigger than you.
Okay.
So it is sort of the scale thing.
So do we have any other like neat Hearthstone or domain facts before we move on?
Yeah, so some domains can form a Hearthstone naturally. So while often the intention of a manse is to channel the essence to create a Hearthstone, among other things, some domains do it naturally, so you get wild Hearthstones. And there's a Luna Charm that lets you manifest a Hearthstone out of your essence, and it just appears in your flesh.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So are then you powering the Warstrider with yourself, or is it a new independent Hearthstone?
It is a new independent Hearthstone.
So Monica, how does this work in Essence?
Essence takes all of that crafting stuff and extended actions and the bureaucratic process project thing and everything you would want to do over a long period of time and goes, it's one system called Ventures. And Ventures basically break down into a couple things. You have to have prerequisites, so basically like, what skills are you using to do this? Of obstacles in which, when you are setting this thing up, you are identifying all the things that could possibly go wrong. Or like, things you'll need. So if you're making an artifact, you're like, well, I need some magical materials, I need some behemoth teeth, I need a forge where I can shape behemoth teeth. You basically are like, okay, there's this many obstacles I have to overcome in order to succeed. Then you set up how long this is going to take, which both is measured in narrative time, which determines how often you can roll from as frequently as like once a scene, every time the scene changes during play, to like just once a session or whatever, depending on how long it goes. Downtime, which has a mechanical definition on Essence, is assumed to be passing as you're working on these things. So even if you can roll once per scene, you're presumed to be taking some time out to go work on it. Then you have the difficulty of everything, which is pretty bog standard for Exalted. It's how many successes you need to make it happen. But you also have something called advantages, which are things you can basically buy with your successes that make life easier for you further down the road. As you're setting that up, you discover these advantages, or you bring the advantages to the project as you are working. So of course, because there's a difficulty, there are also consequences of failure, and then that determines the result of your venture. And of course, when you do these ventures, you can also bring your merits into play, like your resources or other crafting artifacts, or like your followers might help you or whatever. The thing that this introduces that's pretty different from the regular thing is that you can choose to do something that's called cut corners, where you can basically make life harder for yourself to make it easier, to like make the roll easier. If you succeed while cutting corners, your skill scrapes you by, and that doesn't bite you in the ass. But if you fail, it becomes worse. Play at your own risk. Then Essence basically collapses ventures down into acting under duress, which is any sort of extended action where time is against you. Crafting, which covers pretty much everything, like personal scale mundane items, large scale mundane items, creative works, artifacts, manses, repairing, so on and so forth. Then, of course, you have embassy ventures, which are basically leadership stuff, information gathering, magical workings, and travel. So that is one system for all of that. And they all work basically the same way that I just described.
I guess my thoughts now, having played out most of a campaign with a crafting-focused character, is that it really does require some extra attention to bring crafting into the game the way that 3rd edition does it. And it puts a burden on the player to, like you say, play the resource management minigame. I think if I were going to refine the system instead of replace it with something like Ventures, what I'd want to do is flatten it out. Probably just have two tiers of crafting projects, of the basic things that you can roll for and the things that take a longer time, and not have a four-tier system, which just puts getting to some of that higher tier stuff behind so much of a barrier that even with a deep investment into crafting charms, it's difficult to get there for a player.
Yeah. The last thing I will toss out there is that Essence does something that Exalted has never done before and tell you what the manse looks like. And then also it adds greater Hearthstones, so 5-dot Hearthstones. All 5-dot manses come with a little narrative throwaway bonus that gives you something neat and cool when you do a very specific thing in your special place.
Neat. So rather than doing a demo this time, because the system is pretty straightforward at a basic level, but really you get to see it as it plays out over a campaign. You can check that out on The Fall of Giara. I mentioned Neman Sarissa a couple times through the session, and we'll have some links in the show notes to episodes where she gets her craft on.
And other than Fall of Giara, Chaz, where can we go to find out what you're up to?
You can follow me on Twitter as @StoryToldChaz. I don't do a lot of tweeting, but I do a little bit of retweeting. And I'm trying to tweet more stuff. I tweeted a pie on Pie Day because I made pie.
And how about you, Monica?
If you want to follow me and see me trying to catch up with the week's worth of tabletop role-playing indie Twitter's discourse on Saturdays and Sundays, because that's when Blazeball doesn't play, you can follow me at Zenith Sun. Every so often I drop a banger of a tweet that suddenly blows up, and then all of indie TTRPG Twitter likes it. Rip my notifications.
And if you're like, Essence, this system isn't punishing enough in terms of difficulty of acquiring materials to build something, then learn about artifacts, wonders, talismans, gadgets, devices, grimoires, principes, primers, indexes, codices, artifacts, relics, soul flowers, and matrices on Mage the Podcast, or follow me on Twitter at Terry Robinson. Thank you for listening to Systematic Understanding of Everything, an Exalted podcast. Go to exaltcast.com to subscribe, see our show notes, or listen to our past episodes. We're available on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and anchor.fm. If you have a question, shoot us an email at questions@exaltcast.com. If you'd like to support our show, please consider using the affiliate links in our show notes to make purchases on DriveThruRPG and thestorytellervault.com. The opening theme is Return of the Solar Exalted, and the closing theme is the Sidereal Exalted Lesser But Safe from Fanfare for the Chosen by James Semple, and is used with permission. In the meantime, exalt strong.